I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Joshua Spodek. Josh is an adjunct professor at NYU, leadership coach and workshop leader for Columbia Business School, columnist for Inc., founder of Spodek Academy, and author of Leadership Step by Step. He's led seminars in leadership, entrepreneurship, creativity, and sales at Harvard, Princeton, MIT, INSEAD, the New York Academy of Science, and in private corporations. He holds 5 Ivy League degrees, including a PhD in astrophysics and an MBA, and studied under a Nobel Prize winner. He helped build an X-ray observational satellite for NASA, co-founded and led as CEO or COO several ventures, and holds 6 patents. Josh, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Great to be here, David. Thank you for having me.
It's really a pleasure to have somebody like you on who's had quite a track record of successes and a really accomplished background. And many people would see you as having achieved multiple breakthroughs. So you seem to embody the notion of smashing plateaus. How do you do it?
You know, it's funny because people do talk a lot. A lot of people say you've achieved a lot. You've done a lot of different things. And right now there's one thing, you know, the book is coming out and that's like my big passion right now. That means every other thing that I've done in the past, I'm not doing anymore. And all those things that I loved stopped for some reason. Every now and then there's something I stop because I like something else more, but usually something, and sometimes it's a big disaster. Sometimes it's just, I can't get ahead anymore. And everything I did that I'm not doing anymore stopped. So yeah, there's been a lot of stages and things that where things just didn't work out, having to get past it. So how do I do it? Each one is a different thing. And each time I learn something new that I didn't know before. And I think a lot of it is that one big thing is like there's a long journey. I don't like the word journey. It's a long process of learning more about myself, what my interests are and so forth. So that when I start doing something, I don't start something intending for it to end. I start something because I think it's going to be my biggest passion ever. And each time I learn a little bit more about myself, so that I learned, oh, I didn't really like that, or I wasn't really able to do that, or I didn't realize that I didn't have resources that I needed in that area. And finding out what you like more enables you to do the next thing. I never started something and intending it for it to end. So I always learned something new that I only could have learned by doing that thing and reaching that end. I don't like it, but I think that's the only way to go.
It's interesting that you say you don't like it. So what's an example of one of these processes that you went through where you came to a shift point and then needed to take a different path or decided to take a different path?
There are 2 really, really big ones. And I'll start with the first one chronologically. And if you want, I can go to the second one after that too. So the first one was when I started my PhD in physics. Physics was everything to me. I mean, I still really love it. And a PhD is roughly a 6-year program. I figured, you know, there's Einstein and there was Newton and Galileo, and eventually there'll be Spodek. I'll be the next one in a long line of great, great physicists. And a couple of things happened. At the beginning of graduate school, I really liked it. It was very challenging. It was actually the first time I got some really low grades because I came from a liberal arts college, and suddenly you're thrust into all these students from other countries who never, you know, from like 15 years old, all they did was physics and math. So suddenly I had much less preparation. I was getting low grades, but I struggled through that and I made it through that. And I actually felt really good because I kind of caught up. But once I started doing research, the life of a researcher was just not my life. It's mostly debugging. The kind of stuff that I'd learned about from decades earlier, where you could do experiments on your own, that life wasn't around anymore. The experiment I was on a great experiment, the satellite that I helped build. Great meaning there weren't that many people on it, only a few thousand people from a couple dozen countries working for over a decade to put this thing in space. But that's not, you feel like you're like a cog. And, you know, I wrote a thesis that's now, I'm proud to say that the numbers that I got are important and necessary to process the data from this satellite. But it's like 2 numbers for 6 years. And that wasn't like, that's not what I intended. That's not what I thought. And suddenly I was invested. By this point, like 3 or 4 years into it, I realized this isn't quite what I wanted. And I'm trying to decide, do I want to do this or not? And I felt really trapped. Like, if I kept doing what I was doing, I didn't like it anymore. I felt like a cog in a wheel. And if I switched into industry, then that's like military industrial. I didn't really like that. If I went into Wall Street, you know, I'd make more money, but it wasn't a lifestyle or culture that I really wanted to be in. And what do you do when you've invested everything you have into something and now you don't want to do it? And it's not like, at least if I'd gone into finance, like I'd be rich, but grad school in physics is like, you're not getting rich.
Nope.
I mean, that was one big challenge that I didn't know what to do. The other big one was, what happened after that was I ended up, some friends, we started a company together and the company was successful, but I had entered it thinking, oh, I got a PhD in physics. I'm really smart. I can figure lots of stuff out. And on the engineering side and on the, like the building the product and getting the initial things going, I was pretty good at that, mainly because my passion. But when we hit our first recession, this is the early 2000s, I had no idea I didn't know what a recession meant at the time, let alone what it would do to the company, what it would do to the team. And I certainly didn't have the social and emotional skills to handle a team with fractured interests and moving off in different directions and how to keep a company together in really difficult times. And people were depending on me, and I was younger than a lot of them. And I didn't have the humility to recognize what was going on. I don't claim to be the most humble person now, but I didn't know how to ask for help. I was really lost. It was a really difficult time. And, you know, it's such a big thing now in the entrepreneurship world and in Silicon Valley. They're all like, fail early, fail fast, fail often. Failure is awesome. And I don't know how many of them actually went through a period when you don't know whom to trust anymore, when you don't know if you're going to make it. When things are good, everyone's like, yeah, this is great. We're all in this together. And then when things aren't going well, everyone's like, we got to get our part. You know, you figure out for yourself. And it was really like, I don't hear people talking about how the emotions that you face at that time. I don't like that at all. It was probably one of the biggest growth periods of my life. And looking back, I'm glad that I made it through it. But I don't know. I don't say like fail often. Fail's great. I'm like, yeah, it's a learning experience, but it's really hard. And people don't talk about that. But I don't know of any other way to learn. I mean, there is that. Anyway, so those are two experiences. Sorry for the long answer.
No, actually, they're great examples. And you're so right that not only do these unexpected roadblocks occur at different stages as we go through life and go through business, whether you're an entrepreneur or an employee, I think we all face these different shift points that we need to navigate. And you're totally right that being able to address the emotional reaction that we have when these things happen is really critical to our success and being able to get through the plateau.
You said it a little more clear than I did, that facing these emotional challenges, a lot of what, I mean, I teach and coach leadership, and a lot of what we deal with are social and emotional issues that most people don't really think about that much. And I think a lot of people, they think, if you face a physical challenge, like you have to lift a heavy weight or if you move something heavy, we know what it feels like, and you just have to like push harder. But when you face emotional challenges, it often feels like you become a different person, and the type of skill is really different, and a lot of people don't realize it. They think, I'll start a company, and if there's any problems, I'll handle them. And the thing is that most people can handle them. It's just such a different nature of problem. The feeling inside is not like, I got to push harder. It's like, I have to change myself. And once you get the skills, which I, as far as I know, the only way to do it is through going through experiences like that. But once you get the skills, you can handle it, although it's still really hard. I don't know how to describe it. You just feel like a different person. Most people kind of get it when, you know, December 30th, you say, all right, I'm going to go to the gym twice a week for this year, no matter what it takes, I'll do that. And then somewhere in late January or February, it's like some cold Friday and you're just like, oh man, I'm supposed to go to the gym tonight, but I'm just too tired. It's not like you can't go. It's like you don't want to go. And the person that you were on December 30th, all proud and ready to go, is not who you are at the later date. It's almost as if you can become a different person.
What tips can you offer for people who are feeling the emotions of being in the plateau big time?
There's a couple of things. One is that, I mean, my whole practice is trying to give people experiences on a small scale to develop them when things aren't so difficult, so that when things are difficult, they're falling back on experience rather than book knowledge or out in the cold. And that's like with any skill. I mean, you start, you know, if you learn to play the piano, you start playing scales. You don't start on Carnegie Hall stage. And a lot of people, I think, they get thrust into a leadership or an entrepreneurship position early that's really big and they can't handle. And if they'd only started with something small and built it up, I think a lot of people that we think are great leaders that are born that way, I think life gave them a small challenge early and then a medium challenge after that and then a hard challenge after that. So they learned and grew. And some people get lucky that way. A lot of people get unlucky and have something really big early. And then they think, oh, I just can't handle this. Even if they had started with something smaller, they might have been able to develop those skills. And I think the other really big thing is people who have been through these experiences before, to lean on other people's experience. I remember when my company was borderline bankrupt and I didn't know where to turn, there were a few people that I spoke to and they gave me this incredible advice that was like really simple. And only later did I realize the reason they could give such great advice was that they had been there before. And I would circle back to them and say, how did you know this? And they said, oh yeah, it was a really difficult time. And it can be mentors, it can be a board of advisors, it can be just professors or people that you've worked with that you know have had difficult experiences. And then of course there's family. I mean, my relationship with my mom got closer then. I think I said that, you know, I didn't really know whom to trust anymore.
Yeah, you did say that. And I'm thinking about this as you're describing what you went through and who you talked to. Mm-hmm. How do you decide who to talk to?
Yeah, it's difficult. You know, first of all, my mom, that's a kind of, your mom's generally on your side, at least my mom is. And so that one was one. There was one professor who was on my board and he and I become friends. I mean, he's a generation older than me, but when things got difficult, he remained calm. When people were at each other's throats, he focused on process to make sure that people were like, he wasn't trying to get people to pick a side. He was just trying to get people to communicate with each other and make communication productive. And his advice was always focused on relationships. And that's a big thing I've learned from him is that, you know, he's one of my main reasons that I'd look at business as something about relationships. Profit is secondary to that. I think, you know, the money will come and go, but the relationships, if you focus on them, they will stay. There's a few people over the years that I've trusted and believed in and things didn't work out. And I've just learned to vet a bit more, but you know, I still make decisions in some areas of life much slower than I'd like to, just because there've been a few people who I put my faith into and we signed contracts and we moved ahead. And then they, like, there's one guy I can think of, he just stopped paying me in the middle. He was in a different country and there's no way I can enforce the contract. And the guy just owes me money. I delivered and I never got paid. And so now whenever I sign a contract, I still think of that. You know, it's like you get burned at the stove and it takes a while to get back to it. And so I vet more, you know, I check references and I try to find mutual acquaintances so that it's not just relying on a contract. Some things I confess that I don't know the answer to.
Yeah. So what I think I'm hearing you say is that relationships are more important than profits.
I think so. I mean, I think that the relationships that's what's helped me through the most difficult times. And, you know, I've never missed paying a bill. The money hasn't been a problem for me. But relationships, if you don't focus on them, they can really linger as something that makes you feel miserable for a long time.
Mm. Josh, what's been your experience with formal kinds of help, like business coaches or peer support communities, et cetera?
Yeah, I've had coaching over the years from different places. You know, it's funny, one of my first coaches was someone who coached me on relationship skills, who was younger than me. And it was kind of weird because, like, significantly younger than me. And I've ended up learning more from him than almost anybody. And, you know, at first I thought it was like a humbling experience, but it was more like bursting false pride. This guy was really good at what he did. And, you know, once I learned to listen and follow the advice that he gave, it was very effective. I recently got coaching. This is more on a personal nature, but, you know, I had a long relationship that ended and I knew how to coach myself. I knew the exact situation that I was in, but coming from another person, you know, other people can see you from a perspective that you can't, and they can tell you things like I would say stuff to her and the person coaching me. And she would just say, here's what I heard you say. And when she said it back to me, I was like, oh, now I see what's going on. And it was very clear. And it just made a process that would have taken, I don't know how, a process that would have taken a lot longer to get through and to learn from and to make a meaningful part of something that was productive for me in my life. You know, it made it a matter of weeks instead of, I don't know how much longer. You know, ending a relationship is always difficult. And, you know, this is in the middle of marketing a book and so forth. So it wasn't like I had free time to linger. Yeah, coaching is really helpful. And, you know, I have all these degrees. I've gone back to school several times. I've always learned a lot there too.
And do you have any experiences with communities of support as opposed to individual coaches?
Over the years, I've organized a few groups. When I first started, I guess this would be shortly after business school, I'd picked up that business school taught me a lot of things that were more theoretical. And when I tried to put them in practice, I realized I didn't know what I was doing. And I'd go into situations where I thought, oh, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to say this, and they'll say that, and I'll say this, and they'll say that, and everything will work perfectly. And then I'd walk in, and it wouldn't work out. And I realized I needed to practice. So I formed a group of people, and we would get together. And at first, we were practicing social skills of like how to tell stories and things that were like basic, fundamental things that are important, but you have to practice. And then we started each time that we'd meet, which was, I think, weekly. Each person would take what they were an expert at and they would teach everybody else and give a little exercise. And so that it wasn't helping me out of a jam, but it was really fun, actually. And I learned a lot, stuff that school just didn't cover. Then also I had a friend who, he took acting classes, and he's also someone who went through like a really difficult period, and he ended up switching, moving into acting, and he suggested to take some acting classes. And acting is really a much more communal experience than I expected. And I learned a lot there about emotional awareness and reading other people's emotions and sharing yours. And, you know, acting students get a lot closer than, I mean, physics, you get intellectually, a lot of intellectual discussion, but not so much emotional. And in acting, it's much more emotional. So that was a place where I grew a lot quickly.
From your experiences in these group settings, are there elements of what you think makes a group like the ones you've been in work well versus ones that don't work so well?
For the first one, I organized it, and it certainly helped to have a leader who I had to do a lot. You know, a big piece of leadership for me is doing what is going to fall through the cracks if other people don't do it. And I was the one there to make sure we could get space and that people would show up on time and everyone was organized as to who would do what. So someone to make sure things don't fall through the cracks is a big one. I took initiative on that one too. Everyone was glad to do it, but I don't know if anyone else would have started it. So those leadership elements are, to me, the big thing. Choosing the people in it. There were a few people who kind of were around at the beginning, but then there was a core group that stayed. And that's important too, like the selection, how you choose who's in the group. Those are the things that come to mind.
And do you find anything that's counterintuitive about getting help from a group versus getting help from an individual?
Well, it's very personal. I mean, the group stuff. You can open up in ways with a group that you can't necessarily open up with one person, because sometimes it can be so intense with one person. I don't know. To me, it's hard to look back beforehand, because now looking back, everything makes a lot of sense. I'm trying to think of, were things different than I expected, or was there something counterintuitive? But looking back, it seems very intuitive. And now I'm thinking about it. It's been a while since I've had that group, and I'm thinking I should restart it. Maybe not that group, but a group similar.
What's the kind of thing that is easier to open up about in front of a group versus an individual? Because that does sound counterintuitive to me. I would think that if there's something that's really causes you discomfort, talking about it to one person might be easier than talking about it to a whole group.
I guess I'm thinking of showing your flaws, because, you know, we start off with storytelling, and it later became a lot of other things, but we all agree that storytelling is like universal. Every culture in the world is very useful stuff. And I can get up and perform in front of a group. I guess it's that performance aspect of it. Like, I can show my flaws. And in that case, we're developing social skills. When there's just one person, you're not really doing that so much. And that's been, I've since grown from there. I've done like storytelling in front of large groups, like hundreds of people. And that's a big challenge. You know, actually, this takes me back to business school. One of the big things, this was such a big experience for me, was to join the class play called Folly. And going up on stage was a huge, look, I was ready to throw up. I mean, I was on the wings with them, everyone's on stage doing their lines, and like my cue to come on is coming up. And I know there's like 500 people in the audience, and I know a lot of them. And if you mess up, it can be really embarrassing. And for people who have performed on stage, I had not been on stage in front of an audience since third grade. And I was scared and anxious and nauseous. And but once I got on and then things started, like I said my lines, I'd practiced and rehearsed and they came out right. The standards are low, luckily for me. It's like, it's sketch comedy and not everyone's an actor or had any acting training. So, but I felt great. I couldn't, not great, like one of the best feelings I've ever had in my life was the couple hours after that was just, I felt amazing. And I don't know if it exactly fits in with what you were saying, but it's a group experience that was hugely transformational. And this was before I'd taken acting classes that my friend had advised. So it was a big growth experience. That was one of the big experiences for me. Like that part of business school was greater than almost any other class that I took there.
Well, your level of vulnerability in front of an audience is very different than your level of vulnerability with one person who may be coaching you.
Yeah. And facing those vulnerabilities and overcoming them. In this case, actually, a big, big lesson is practice and rehearsal make what might otherwise be impossible something that happens automatically. And now you might say automatically, well, how do you grow from that? How do you learn from that? Well, you do. I mean, the performance becomes more automatic. How to handle things like that becomes easier. And that's a big part of my practice is in what I teach is I give people scripts and things to practice to go through things and practice and practice and practice. And that way, when you get into the stressful situation that leadership and entrepreneurship and life are going to hand you, you're falling back on what you've done before. And that's growth. That's learning.
It reminds me a lot of why we have fire drills, because we want to have the practice of knowing exactly what to do when the crisis hits. Because the crisis, and in particular, when you're talking about leadership and dealing with some of the challenges we go through in life, those crises will come.
Yeah. You know, I can't help but think of like sports. If I watch a college football game, that quarterback is leading a team and he's maybe like sometimes they're 19, 20 years old. And sometimes they have 100 million people watching them. And I think, how can they possibly handle the stress? Do they even realize what's going on? And then I realized that they practice and rehearse and they practice and rehearse. And, you know, they've been playing for a long time. So over the years, they've developed and developed and developed. And virtually any skill that, you know, that's active and social and it's emotional and performance-based, we all get better through practice and rehearsal. And everyone messes up the first time. Everyone. You know, give Robert De Niro a script. The first time he reads it, he's going to sound wooden, just like anybody else. And the first time he ever took on any script, he didn't know how to do it well. You know, I have a post-up. I came across Martin Luther King in school got C's in public speaking. I mean, if anyone is a great orator, it's Martin Luther King. And he got C's in school. So a lot of what he learned wasn't in school because he wasn't getting it there and he wasn't born with it. So he had to develop it at some point. And it was after school. So, I mean, school must have probably helped him some, but I think it was, you know, the challenges in life. I'm sure he blew some early speeches on the way to I Have a Dream.
Wow, that's a great example.
Yeah, I mean, if you look, I mean, there's a bunch of great quotes. I love, not to draw too much from sports, but Michael Jordan has a lot of talks about the shots that he missed at the buzzer. And Babe Ruth, who struck out more than anybody, struck out a lot. Thomas Edison, who tested all these things and most of them didn't work out. Yeah, that's, after you've gone through it a few times, yeah, I've definitely learned that I do a lot of things that I didn't used to do just to find out what would happen. And most of them don't work out, but I don't think of them as failure anymore. I think of them as how else would I find out? That's what happens when you do make a lot of mistakes, is that you learn the skills of just, yeah, okay, I'm experimenting.
I love that. How else would I find out? Whom do you know personally who's been successful at smashing plateaus?
The friend that I talked about who was the actor, the reason he went into acting was that in the 2008 crisis, his business got destroyed. And he at least saw it early enough that he was able to sell a bunch of his assets in order to not spiral out, like not really be in trouble. And I always saw him. He was one of the most charismatic people I've ever met. But I was wondering what was going to happen to him. And he completely switched into acting. And he started, so he would have been in his mid, maybe late 30s at the time. And what did he have to show for himself? A business that he sold without a huge catastrophic loss. And what is going to acting? That's not no guarantee of success. That's like, you're starting from ground zero. A lot of people start when they're in their teens. And
starting from ground zero in a very tough field.
Yeah, huge competition. I mean, what did he have going for him? He was in New York City, so he's got access to a lot of stuff. And he completely restarted from scratch. And he completely put himself into acting. I mean, there was no holding back. And now it's kind of cool. It's like a friend calls me up and he's like, hey, I saw your friend. He was on Daredevil. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. Like, he's breaking into big stuff and he found out a niche for himself. He does stunts really well. He made himself really built. He goes to the gym a lot and there's like a niche for people like that. So he does a lot of action things. But he was a big influence on me to see him make that transformation. And I have to go back and ask him, how did he know acting? Because it fits him like a glove. I see him like a lot like, what's his name? Who's in The Wrestler? Mickey Rourke. And there must have been a lot of introspection of how he figured that out for him. Can I talk about people who are not people that I know? I mean, historical figures.
Yeah, absolutely.
So a big one for me now is Nelson Mandela and 27 years in jail. And from prison, negotiated with the presidents of the country, eventually to get their jobs. This is like, it's funny because my dad, I was just talking to my dad about this. And he was like, well, if you teach people about someone like that, isn't that too much? Aren't you teaching them about someone that's like out of their reach? And they might think, well, I shouldn't try this because it's too far. I couldn't achieve that. Nelson Mandela is like, that's almost superhuman. But I point out that that's not, I don't start talking about him. I teach people these skills and then point out if you keep applying them and if you keep practicing them, what you're capable of is what these historical figures are, because they were human just like you. They're not, they don't have any special powers. They're not magic. And, you know, you hope you don't have to go through experiences like they do. And I think the reason he writes his autobiography, and a lot of people leave their records behind, why they give their message, is that they want people to be able to, I think, I can't speak for anyone else but myself, but I think that he wants people to be able to do and achieve what he did without having to go through these things. But if you have to face these things, then you can too. I think that's one of the main things they want to leave as a legacy. So he's one of the big ones. I mean, Viktor Frankl is another really big one of someone who went through, you know, life dealt him. I mean, he was in Nazi Germany. He was put into Auschwitz. And when you read Man's Search for Meaning, he writes about finding meaning in life under about the worst circumstances humans have created for each other. And even if you read it closely, you read that he talks about finding bliss in certain situations there. And he was not a special person beforehand. He was a regular person. And what the situation revealed in him was not something that no one has. It's something that everybody has. And one of my big challenges for me is to be able to find as much joy and bliss and meaning in my life without having to go through the horrible situation that he did. If he was able to, then I can too. And if I'm starting from a situation that's not so materially disastrous as his, then I should be able to also.
Those are great examples. Josh, what do we have to look forward to from you in the near future?
Well, hopefully the book is just getting started. I have a lot of 5-star reviews on Amazon. And I think the message in it of, not the message, but that it's not about passive reading and learning facts. It's about actively taking on challenges. So it's a set of exercises that if you do them, you'll develop the skills and experiences of being a leader. And I hope that it will catch on and that people will say, this is a new way of learning. It's different than before. And we should apply it in lots of different areas. If I think past there, I teach at NYU, there's my leadership course, there's my entrepreneurship course. So the next book will be Entrepreneurship Step by Step, which will be the same structure and style of learning, active learning, but with different sets of exercises that apply to entrepreneurship. And I want to point out also that leadership and entrepreneurship they're not the best word. They're the best words I can think of. But if you think of leadership being like some guy in a suit telling people what to do, or you think of entrepreneurship as something having to do with Shark Tank, what my stuff is about is much more the emotional and social skills underneath these things. Like in entrepreneurship, it's more about developing empathy, being able to listen, problem solving, but really taking initiative and taking responsibility. And on leadership, it's a lot more about empathy and compassion and how to create meaning and value for yourself and for others and how to develop your self-awareness. Because the resources that I saw out there, there's a lot of books out there that say things like, you know, it's important to have resilience. It's important to have self-awareness. It's important to have grit or hustle, but not how do you develop them. So my book is how to develop them. And I hope that catches on as something that And why I felt compelled to write these books is that that was something that I felt was missing. What do you actually do to get there? What's the equivalent of what do you rehearse? What do you practice?
And I think, you know, much of our discussion today has really underscored the need to be able to approach leadership and entrepreneurship from the lens that you've just described. And, you know, given your own background with 5 degrees from Ivy League institutions, yet you've been quite forthcoming about the struggles that you have gone through and how you've overcome them and how you now teach other people some of the techniques and the skills that you've learned along the way, which is really phenomenal.
Yeah. You know, no one ever bought a product because the founder of the company had a PhD. They buy it because it solves their problem. And those degrees, I'm glad I got the degrees. But ultimately, it's if you're going to sell something, it's about the customer's needs first. You have to put their needs first. If you're going to lead somebody, I believe you'll be most effective if you put the interests of the person that you're leading first. If you can find out what's motivating them and connect that motivation to the task at hand, then they will appreciate your leadership. If you use authority and tell them what to do, I think they'll tend to resent it and try to undermine it. So it's really a lot of these social and emotional skills to put other people first and how to work with emotions as opposed to just external incentives.
Well said. Josh, how can listeners learn more about you?
So my personal blog is at joshuaspodek.com, and you'll see that I've posted every day for the past, I think I'm into 7 years now. And so that's my views on the world through my leadership perspective. Then there's spodekacademy.com, and that's where my courses are available to anyone, independent of NYU, independent of any university. And they're the exact same courses. And let's see, on Twitter, I'm Spodek, and on Amazon, well, it's easy to find Leadership Step by Step. So those are the main places to find me.
That's great. Well, we'll include those in the show notes. Josh, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. It's been a really fascinating discussion. My guest today...
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
If you don't mind my saying, I really appreciate your giving me this perspective. I've learned in the process of answering this question. So I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thanks so much. My guest today has been Josh Spodek, founder of Spodek Academy, among many other attributes. Thanks again, Josh, for joining us.
It was my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions, where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.